That was me again.
So welcome, everybody. This is Elaine, and it is Thursday, September 29th, 2016, and this is the 3 p.m. Eastern Time TSS call. We're going to be talking about taking aim today, and so we're going to go ahead and get started by checking in. And again, if you're making sort of scrappy kinds of noises, it really the microphone's really picking up. And it's,
okay, let me see if it's me again.
Is that
better?
That's better. Yeah.
It was just moving. It wasn't touching anything. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's what happens sometimes. Yeah, we forget. These microphones can be really sensitive.
Yeah.
Sort of like our kids.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's get started today by taking aim a little bit, checking in and doing a little taking aim. I know a couple of you, it's your first time on a group call, so we'll sort of guide you through it. You got two seasoned parents on the call with us today. We have Liz and Pam, who are on a foreign continent from those in the U.S., so it's very early in the morning for them, so we usually give them a little time to wake up and have a cup of coffee. But Pam or Liz, if one of you will start check-in so they can get a sense of how we go, that would be great.
Do you want to go, Liz? It's later for you than for me. So you're more awake.
Okay. You will just change the daylight savings, so it's 8 o'clock. So,
oh, man, it's like late for you now.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. Anyway, just for those newies, I'm Liz, and I've got a lovely 19-year-old, and I decided to come through and do this course again just because we've got some big stuff going on in our family, and I just really need to stay connected to continue supporting. So briefly, we've just been away on a family holiday, which I thought was going to be really stressful with Kate, who also has depression and anxiety. But actually, it was really fun. It was a lot of fun. It was hard work, but it was a lot of fun. And now we just got home then. She's been off at camp. She's a youth leader at a camp. And my hubby is in Australia. So I've had the week to myself and have loved it. Really,
time
to just relax and paint and not have to put away all my paints, and it's just been awesome. So I'm picking Kate up today, which will be fun because she's been a bit stressed on camp and is really ready to be home. She's been away from home for 3 weeks, which is really, it's awesome that she's done it, but it's been really hard for her. So she's ready to come home and I'm ready to see her. And Pete gets home on Monday. So
what do you want to – let's go ahead and do it just in the use of using time well. Do you have a sense of where do you want to take aim today?
Yeah, because this is a new year for me, just redoing this, I'm going to restart myself, and I'm just going to take aim at having a conversation with Kate about – what's something she needs support with? What's a big thing for her? Well, like a little thing, but do you know what I mean? Like a little step, but what is it for her as opposed to me? Because I feel that it's been great for me doing this course, but I want to really focus on seeing some movement that she wants to see. So
I think what I'm hearing you saying is that you want to take aim on support, sort of generally for the year, you want to shift the focus to really figuring out how to support her.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes. But my specific is having the conversation with her.
So you want to think about how do you want to have the conversation with her?
Yeah.
Okay. So you want to, you're taking aim on having a really, on preparing for a conversation with her about support for her. Got it. Okay. Who else wants to check in and maybe take aim? Thank you.
I'll go next if you like. I'm Pam. I live in Melbourne, Australia, and I have a daughter who's almost 18, and she has ADHD combined. I also have an older daughter who's neurotypical, who's nearly 21. So like Liz, we've got a complicated family situation, so it's been great to have Liz relatively nearby, just across the Tasman in New Zealand. So for me, checking in, my daughter in the Australian sort of calendar is in her senior year, and she has 41 days left until her final exam, and I absolutely am counting. So
and have been all year.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a hell of a journey, but I'm really delighted that in the last, I guess, month or so, she's started to really take ownership of her study and her preparation, and she's now seeing a psychologist weekly, which is terrific, because getting her to accept support has been a battle, and she also initiated seeing an ADHD coach as well and has set up that time herself, which is just amazing, and has had a couple of sessions with her. And last night before she went to work, she was sitting up doing a study plan for the next 6 weeks, which is
wow.
Terrific actually, and I've seen
wow.
her doing some study in the last few days. She didn't do any of her practice exams, but you know, that's okay. They weren't compulsory, and you know, to be honest, she wasn't really ready to do them. And I think if she had have done them, she probably would have got more demoralised because she hadn't done the work, and the results would have, you know, really given her a bit of a battering in her self confidence. She's also just started 3 weeks ago antidepressants, and it's a bit early to tell whether they're having an impact. There's a couple of bright spots where she's been a bit more engaged in life and, you know, more engaged with her older sister. So, you know, we're just kind of working through the days, really. And I've been on the, you know, working with Elaine and on the program since the beginning of the year, and just sort of wanting to get to the end of this year and, you know, get her kind of done and finished with school.
Hallelujah.
And, oh, for me, Taking aim is really about providing the very best support I can for Lauren for the next 6 weeks, really. And, you know, finding the best time, a little bit like Liz, what's the best time to have the conversation with her around how I can support her? She's taking ownership of the support she needs around her. So I just want to make sure I choose the time of that conversation right based on her mood, her openness to the conversation, and her readiness for, you know, other support other than the sort of professional support around her.
So what I want to offer to both of you before we move on is to remember, you know, when we end these calls, we always ask, you know, what are you taking away? What's your commitment? And how do you want to set yourselves up for success? And what I love about what both of you are taking aim on today is that you're thinking about how do I want to set myself up to be successful in this conversation with my kid. And that's the shift that's happened for you in this process, is that you're no longer, like, it's no longer, oh, yeah, I have to have the conversation. It's how do I set it up to work well, to be the most, for her to be as receptive as possible. And that's a really beautiful shift that I'm hearing from both of you. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I used to just say stuff to her. Oh, I've got to talk to her about this, and I would talk to her about this the next time I saw her. And sometimes that didn't go very well at all.
Exactly. So sort of taking that time to plan it out and think it through and be mindful about it has really made a difference. So that instead of taking aim on, you know, getting her to accept help, which might have been the challenge in the past, now you're taking aim on how do I approach it to be effective. So just an observation and acknowledgement for both of you, that the progress that you've shifted to over this year. So Stephanie, what about you?
Yeah. So I live in San Francisco, or in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I guess what I'm realizing, what I need to figure out how to do is, you know, I don't know how to say it, just the constant, I think my son is not hearing me because of my tone, and because there's not much, because I'm so frustrated, there's not much, I don't hug him as much, I feel disconnected, and I really think he feels disconnected because
yeah.
I think there's a constant, you didn't do this, you need to do that, where is that, you know. So I think, particularly now that he's in high school, there's, you know, they make that natural movement away from you anyway, I think. But I think he feels like he can't do anything right.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to figure out how to change my approach to get him back close to me because I feel like I'm losing him. Does that make sense? So
yeah.
Because I think he just thinks I'm nagging him all the time. You know, of course, they're important things, but it's the approach that I'm taking. So I really appreciate the lady's comments because I think that's what I need to figure out, how to approach him so that he'll listen to me. So, you know, I realized this morning, I said, okay, so to get him out of bed, my 15-year-old, I am going to kiss him, you know, because he won't pull away from me for things like that. But I couldn't remember the last time I had actually touched him. You know what I mean? I couldn't remember that. So I thought that was so basic. You know, I said, Stephanie, you're going to have to, instead of saying, Dylan, you know, you're 20 minutes late. You should have been out of bed, you know, because every day I'm still waking him up.
Right.
So I touched him. I said, you know, I gave him a kiss. You know, I don't know. I'm just thinking if I change my tone, some of those things won't be so off-putting in the immediate, you know, the wake up in the morning is.
Stephanie, if I can sort of play back to you what I'm hearing, because first I just want to acknowledge great observation, you know, that just great. And believe me, Liz and
thank you.
Pam are both sitting here nodding their heads going, yes, yes, yes. that half the part is the awareness that disconnect has happened and that you can do something about it, right? And so I think as you're starting this program in the beginning of this year, it's a beautiful place to take aim, sort of not on something tangible or specific, but to take aim on this bigger issue of connecting with your kid, reconnecting with your kid.
That's it, yeah, right.
You know, it's a powerful place to focus and to sort of set the intention for the year as opposed to just for the next week.
That's right. Because, you know, he's a kid that, you know, I'm noticing now because October, I think, with, you know, U.S. school districts, this is when, you know, everything, the rubber meets the road and, you know, his progress report's already in and he hasn't really figured out how to stay organized and, you know, and he has a sense of nothing's urgent, you know, and I think there's an anxiety for him that's underneath the ADHD, so he does what he can to minimize in his mind what is making him anxious. So for me, I'm realizing that because the more I just rattle off, Dylan, where's this? You didn't do that. You know, I can see that it's turning into anxiety. And then he yells, and then I'm yelling, and we're not really getting anywhere. And I really feel that just even my, and it's the that it makes me tired, you know, and it makes me
it is exhausting.
Anxious.
Yeah.
It is so exhausting. And I just said, okay, I have to bring it back basic. And maybe, because this morning when I was talking to him, and I was very conscious of how I was speaking to him, you know, and it didn't change his tone. He was like, I got it, Mom. And, you know,
but it's not yet. And it won't yet.
Yeah, exactly.
It will
over
time,
so I was
but it
thinking.
Won't yet.
Right. So I was like, well, magic. I was soft to him. Maybe he'll be soft to me. But, you know, I said, it didn't deter me from the stance that I made that I won't elevate this getting up in the morning. And so even though we don't yet have the tools for this year, we had them. Of course, everything changes by, you know, year by year, you know, what worked last year is not working this year. So I just said, okay, even though I don't have the tools, at least what I'm going to do is my approach. And
yeah, that's brilliant. So I'm going to stop you there if that's okay, so we can keep moving
through.
Thank you.
That's fine. That's fine.
No, it's great. And so what I'm hearing is that you're really focusing on setting an intention for your work in this program, and that's reconnecting with yourself.
Yes.
That's a great place to start.
Maya,
I'm coming to you. I have had you on mute because there is definitely something about your microphone that is creating a scratchy noise. So I'm muting you now, but just so you know that when I'm going to be muting you in between, and you can always press star 2 to let me know you need to talk. But while you're figuring out what your microphone issue is, and I don't think
I have a microphone issue. I just turned the page because I was going to write some notes down.
Okay. Yeah, it's
I mean,
quiet now. It's pretty constant the whole time. Okay, that's cool. So let's check in. What's going on for you? You've got two boys.
Yeah, I have two sons, one 17, Matthew. He's doing pretty well. He's going through the college application process, and he's fine. Well, he's on track. And my younger son is 14. He just started high school, so he's having some issues and just adjusting to high school and the homework load and, you know, figuring out what homework he needs from each teacher. So on the Lifeline call, I decided to take my aim on, you know, getting a routine down for him because he has a problem starting his homework when he comes home. And he also, he gets study skills in school because he has an IEP. So lots of times he'll say he does his homework, you know, there and he doesn't have any when he comes home. But I'm thinking, you know, he's in high school and he needs to do a little bit at home before he goes out to play. So yesterday we said he came home and he wanted to play, and I said, let's do a little homework first, and then he showed me that he had it all done. So
awesome.
I said, yeah, awesome. And I did. I said, great job. And I, you know, I was thinking, like, I just want him to get used to at least doing half an hour of homework every night. So I said, well, you have this extra credit assignment, why don't you start that? And so that was it. Like, I think he gets triggered when I talk about homework or ask him about his homework. So he just got really mad and he started throwing things and swearing. That's what he does. He really, like, you know, gets triggered and he gets really angry really fast. So then I just walked away. That's what I usually do. Said, seems like you're angry. And I just go upstairs and let him calm down. And then he kept asking, he wanted to go to the beach. Can I go to the beach? My homework is done. And I just said, no, because, you know, you didn't behave. So if you're going to behave this way, then you're not going to be able to get what you want. And so, and my husband agreed. And then, but then he just like sat around all afternoon. And then we talked about it later at night, my husband and I. And he said it probably would have been better to let him go to the beach and just, you know, get rid of his anger. He, you know, he's like likes motion. He's, you know, he's an active boy. And then just like have the discipline be like you can't have your electronics at night because he really likes to play on his phone at night. So I guess my question is,
so where are you feeling like you're focusing right now? So I hear that there's, so where do you want to focus? What's the change you want to see?
Well, I guess the homework that just, and then, you know, he did give me a kiss this morning. I heard the other woman talking about kind of like, you know, when they're 14 and 15, they feel, you know, they start to like pull away from you. And then with ADHD, it makes it more difficult because, well, at least my son gets angry a lot. But I do, you know, feel like the homework is important for him. So where I want to focus, I guess, is just not having him trigger. Like, and I said this morning, because usually I do check in with him after he has this blow up, and I say, okay, Daniel, you know, I'm not going to ask you to do extra credit work anymore if you got your homework done. And then I said, but can you tell me when you're starting to get angry and just say, Mom, I've done my homework. This is unfair. You know, I want to go to the beach. And I said, you know, I would listen to you. And I would take you to the beach, but when you just get so angry, nothing happens.
So that's, it sounds like it was a great and very constructive conversation. So see if you can focus in on the change that you would want to see, like if you were in the next time, what do you want to be different? Is it about homework, or is it about handling reactivity or helping him handle the word no, or, you know, where's the focus here?
Well, so I guess the problem for him is it kind of goes hand in hand. Like, I just really am noticing that if he says he did the homework and then I ask him, like, one or two more questions, like, can I see it or did you do your English, it's just, like, trigger, you know. So it's the anger goes with the homework. And
well, so stop for a minute. So and it's the trigger is actually you're asking more questions, right?
Hmm. Yes.
He's getting triggered by you asking the questions. So what is there a place for you to look at your awareness about how the communication is landing?
Well, it's frustrating because if I don't say anything, his pattern in middle school was to just say he did it and I would be like, okay. And then, you know, you see like later missing assignments D. So he was basically, you know, not telling me the truth. So that's why I feel like I have to be, you know, ask a few more questions because now it's high school and everything.
So I'm not asking you to defend it. I'm asking you to try to identify what's the one thing you want to start by changing. Where do you want the change? Where's the focus for you? Right now we're just taking aim because there's a whole bunch of issues you could take aim on here, right? Probably 20. And we got to start with one. So what's jumping out at you as one that might be helpful? And I'm happy to hear, if you're open to it, to hear if any of the other moms on the call who have sort of played this game before can sort of identify for you what might be helpful for you to focus on. Would that be helpful for you?
Yes.
Okay, so Liz or Pam, anything jumping out at either of you? Because I know we've had this conversation before.
Yeah. I think having been down this journey, I feel for you. For me, I'd be trying to understand what is triggering him and get curious about that. Because if I can avoid, so with my daughter, avoiding triggering her was one of the key foundations before I could do anything. Because once she got triggered, it's really hard to recover from that. So that'd be the kind of first thing, get curious about what triggers him. And I think you're partly on it, which is when you repeatedly question him, it triggers him. It's the same with my daughter, and I can kind of feel it. I picked her up from work last night and I asked her a couple of benign questions, and it was the sort of second question. She just switched the radio on, clearly just wanted me to shut up.
The other thing I noticed is I learnt about activating the brain, and if he's been at school for several hours, he might just need a break before he does homework, so it might be a timing issue. So he might need to have a glass of water, he might need to have some chill downtime, might need to feed himself before then homework comes in a little bit later. So activating the brain is one thing that I realised, one for me, but also for my daughter, that really is good, and I keep focusing on that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the observation I have with both of those is what I love about what each of you just came up with is it's a strategy that works for you, right? So activating the brain is a strategy that really works for you, Liz, and getting curious is a strategy that really works for you, Pam. And in both of them, the change you were looking for is how to keep from triggering your child, right? How to minimize the triggers. Is that, would you all agree?
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. Because when they're triggered, you can't really achieve anything.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's just that.
So Maya, that's where I might suggest you start by taking aim is to, and maybe for this week it's not even doing anything specifically about it, but it's paying attention to understanding what triggers your son. So that sound like a reasonable place to start?
Yeah, but I mean, I kind of have figured out sometimes when I talk too much and then I try and stop and, you know, walk away. But I just feel like the homework is, I don't know, I guess I feel like...
So I'm going to stop you. I'm going to stop you for a minute and let me coach you here to say, let go of the homework for a minute and focus on understanding the trigger. Are you willing to do that in this call?
Sure.
You're going to get back to the homework, I promise. Again and again and again.
All right. Never goes away.
Well, you know, it's a constant issue. But if you start with the problem instead of starting with the relationship, you're going to continue to have the same problem. But if you can understand what's the trigger and begin to shift that dynamic, you'll be able to have the kind of relationship with him, the conversation with him around homework that you need to be able to have. Okay?
Okay. So
you sort of trust the process for a minute and just go with the, keep your focus in this call on the change that I want to see is understanding what my role is in triggering my son.
Okay.
Is that fair? Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, so let's shift for a minute. So we're gonna talk for a little bit, and I know we're a little behind time today, but that's sort of normal as we have bring new people into the group, so it's totally fine. The topic for today is taking aim, and the concept behind taking aim is that we all get overwhelmed. We've all got so much on our plates. There are so many things we want our kids to be able to do by the time they leave home. I'm going to just mute you, Maya, for a minute. But if you need me, press star 2. Otherwise, I'll unmute you when I stop, okay?
Okay.
There's so much we want them to be able to do by the time they leave. And, you know, all of you guys have teenagers, so you're starting to get to that, oh, I only have a few months, I only have a few years. Like, you know, there's an urgency that starts to build in us to make sure they're ready for life and school and college and whatever else is beyond. And so we have this tendency to want to do it all. You know, we want to do that, and I want to pay attention to this, and the homework, and the tone of voice, and the argument, and the fighting with the sister, and, you know, we want to do it all. And we can over time. But this is where that concept of pacing ourselves becomes really important, to remember that we're in this for the long haul. Our goal is to prepare our kids for independent decision-making when they become adults. That doesn't mean the day they turn 18, hopefully, but it does mean beginning the process of teaching them how to make decisions. And it's really hard to do that if we're asking them to focus on so many different things that they begin to feel like they can't be successful. And they, like what was it, I think that Stephanie said, you know, he can do no right. There's a sense that no matter what I ask, it's not good enough. These are kids who are eventually going to get tired of it and they're going to give up because it doesn't matter if they can do no right. And I think it's very insightful for you to sort of recognize that, Stephanie, and say, okay, I need to shift this dynamic.
Yeah.
And taking aim is a really powerful tool to be able to do that because it's our way. It's something we eventually want to teach them to do as well. But it's our way of saying, okay, I'm not going to correct everything. I'm not going to redirect everything. I'm not going to tackle everything at one time. I'm going to think about the one change that I want to see that's going to make a difference in the family. And maybe it's going to a change for them. Maybe it's a change for me. I mean, Liz is famous for coming in and taking aim on self-care because she knows she's got to take care of herself to be able to take care of the family. So as we focus on one thing, we are then able to sort of let go of some of the other things and not have to hold them to that same standard or level or whatever, so that we can focus on passing the baton from us to our kids on one thing at a time and really beginning to teach them that process of decision-making. And any decision starts by getting clear on the decision you're making in the first place. And when we start piling on, you know when you get upset and you start crying because something happened, and then it's like, and this happened, and that happened, and I, and that, and you know, and you sort of, it sort of cascades up, right? It builds up. Well, we sort of do that with our kids with corrections. You know, you need to sit at the table, and you need to use your fork, and you need to make sure your homework's done on time, and you need to start it when I told you to, and, you know, all of these different things. And at some point, they pop, you know. And I was coaching somebody today about it, because, and this has come up a lot this week, a lot of 14-year-old kids, 14, 15-year-old kids who are in their freshman year of high school in our community. And part of what happens with 14-year-olds in particular, and it sort of continues as they get older, is they're beginning to exercise that independence. And so our style of parenting with them has to start shifting, because they're no longer going to be responsive to that sort of directive approach that we take when they're little. When they're little, there's a direction, you tell them to follow it, you know, often they do, and that's sort of the process you're in. But once they hit about 13, 14, our parenting approach needs to shift to more of supporting and empowering them in their decision making instead of directing them in their behavior. And it's a very it's a subtle but very powerful shift, and it happens about that time. And if we don't do it, what ends up happening is they start getting deceptive, they start getting deceitful, not deceitful, right, but sneaky is maybe a better word of it.
Right.
They start to hide, right? Because they don't have a really good motivation other than self-protection. And so they tend to sort of begin to behave in these what we call defensive, dishonest kinds of ways. And that's pretty common when a 14, 15-year-old kid feels like they're being treated like a little kid and they're being directed and directed. And so part of the process that we're going to work on in this program is really shifting the language and shifting the approach so that we're empowering them to their decisions instead of directing them to what we want them to do. And in the context of that, taking aim is a very powerful tool for us to get really clear on where we want them to be taking their own leadership or owning or buying in, so that we're not trying to direct them on everything. Because when we try to direct them on everything, it tends to cause more interference in our relationships with teenagers than it does benefit. So I'm going to stop there. I'm muting you, Maya. And, so sort of opening it up for conversation, what comes up for anybody? What thoughts, questions, comments?
I have a question, Stephanie.
Yeah.
It's like you just said exactly where I am right now. Because one thing that's really terrible in my family is that my husband and I aren't on the same page about his ADHD. And we never really had been when he was diagnosed in kindergarten. So, you know, Dylan has been in, you know, he's been in therapy, you know, he's you know, taking Concerta, you know, but my husband, although he'll take him to therapy, he doesn't really buy into the whole idea of it in the first place. So, I hear you talk about the directive approach, and my husband still is using that with him. So how successful, I guess it, you know, I don't know if it'll necessarily be a great situation that we're still not on the same page, but could there be a certain amount of success if I'm the one that's changing the approach, but one parent isn't? I know it makes it for a harder family to have.
No, it's a great question, and before I answer it, I want to see if anybody else wants to say anything. Okay. So my answer is absolutely one parent can turn the ship. And it just came up on another call with a client today, too. It's lovely when you can get on the same page with your spouse, if you have a spouse. And, I mean, it's a lovely thing to be able to do, and it's ideal. But it's not essential, because because so much of parenting is about your relationship with your child. And that relationship at the end of the day is one-to-one. Yes, they have a relationship with their parents, but they also have an individual relationship with each parent.
Right.
And so you can shape how you approach that relationship and shift outcomes for your child based on your approach. And, you know, and the story I love to tell that I'm sort of famous probably for telling is that my husband wasn't on board when I started doing this work at all. And he felt like we should be tackling everything, and we shouldn't be just taking aim on one thing at a time. That it was, you know, there were too many things she needed to be doing, and I just kept sort of staying the course. And a few years later, he actually became a coach. And when he did, I asked him what changed for him, and he looked at me and he said, "Well, I just couldn't deny anymore that what you were doing was working." So it took him a few years to come on board, but he did. Right.
That's helpful.
Yeah, so you really can shift it, and it starts with you. You really are the only person you can control.
That's true. That's true.
So that's where I would encourage you to focus in this program is, you know, there's that which is in my sphere of influence and my control is me. And I can try to influence those around me, but ultimately the only one I can control is me.
That's great. Thank you for that because, you know, it's such a burden. I don't want to say that, but, you know, your shoulders get really heavy.
Yeah, they do.
You know, just really.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know how you feel. I really do. One of the things that I have found helped because, you know, my husband has been seriously ill, so I've effectively become the sole parent, if you like, even though he's... You know, we still live together as a family.
Right.
He's just not able to, for a range of reasons, participate in the parenting. But I have found understanding triggers has really helped me with my husband around, you know, when we disagreed about parenting issues, the principles around curiosity and understanding triggers have been really helpful in my relationship with him and also in my relationship with my older daughter as well. But, you know, the only thing you can control, as Elaine said, is what I do and what I say. And that can also, you know, that's not just about your relationship with your teenager. It's about the relationship with the other members of your family.
Yeah, that is beautifully put.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that, too. Can you hear me?
Yeah. I've been sort of muting you on and off because there's definitely something in the connection that's scratchy, but I'm trying to keep it open as much as I can.
Okay. Well, I was just going to add that, so I told you about the story that happened last night, and then later that evening, my husband got upset with me because he said, well, you really need to let him go to the beach. You know, he has to blow off steam and... You know, next time we can't take the exercise away, we'll just take away the electronics because, you know, that's the lesser of the, or that's the more of the two evils. Or actually, scratch that. Anyway, it's not
easy to
take away.
Yeah, we got it.
Sports are not an evil. So I said, well, every time, you know, Daniel gets angry, then later on you get mad at me. And I said, you know, this isn't, I said, I came upstairs, you know, we talked about what was a good consequence for his actions. And then, you know, then my husband, and I think maybe the light went on because he was like, oh, you know, I have to help come up with the consequences too. I can't just let you do it and then criticize, you know, what you do because then it's like I have a fight with Daniel and then like an hour later I have a fight with my husband. And I just, you know, it's like a really bad day.
Yeah, I totally hear it.
Right.
So I think it's great that it engages him in the process of setting boundaries and consequences. And what we want to get you to in the future, just for your awareness of where you're heading, is that the consequences will be established in advance. So they don't come out as punishment. They're natural consequences, and he knows what the expectations are. And that's the goal, is that we don't want to be doling out punishments when you don't do something. We want to set the expectations so that the kid knows what's going to happen when they do or don't do a certain behavior. And that's sort of where you're heading. And there's this other piece that's, you know, you're very, very focused on making sure you get systems in place in the homework, and all of that's important. And, you know, there's a huge value to just recognizing that he's a 14-year-old boy who, got his homework done at school and wants to go out and, you know, hit the beach for a little bit, and that's sort of a reasonable expectation too, right? And finding that balance is going to be, I think, your challenge this year.
Okay.
And that's what we will work with.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah. Anybody else? Any other thoughts on taking aim? Is it hard?
I find it really hard when there's so much going on and there's so many big things that you want to achieve, like, you know, you want them to do really well at school and you know they need to do homework and they won't do homework. And I've found it really, it really resonates what some of the people have said, and you want them to do homework, it's really important. But I have had to learn that just because I want that, while I want that and make it clear to her that's what I want, the more I demonstrate that, the less likely she is to do it. And that's been a big journey to go on for me, just to step back and trust that she knows as well as I do how important homework is. And there's a range of reasons why she won't do it. But if I keep pushing it, I trigger her defiance. And, you know, I trigger all of her teenage rebellion by even mentioning it. So that's a big step, because it seems to be, you know, initially I would say to myself, how can I not talk about homework? I mean, education is so important, blah, blah, blah. And I've had to learn that, you know, it's like, you know, when you're going on a drive somewhere, if you just continue to go down a path that you're, you know, more and more your GPS is telling you, please take a U-turn when possible. there's no point continuing.
That's a great analogy. And that is what we do, is we get fixated on something that we think, and it is important. It's not that it's not important.
Right.
It's just that it's not the only thing that's important.
Right.
And part of the challenge as parents is at any given moment we have to figure out what is important at this moment to pay attention to.
Right.
Yeah, so like the car example, it's kind of like, you know, getting to the destination is critical. It's what it's all about. So, you know, doing well at school is critical. But, you know, until I've got fuel in the car and, you know, all the other things I need, I'm not going to go anywhere. And, yeah, that's been a big learning for me.
Right, and every time you hit a trigger and they blow up, it's like getting a flat tire. And you really can't do anything else until you stop and fix the flat tire.
Yeah, and continuing to push through, and I've had some terrible arguments with my daughter, and the analogy is I'm continuing to sort of just say, get in the car and drive the car, and all the evidence is that the tire's flat and I'm going to, you know, we're not going anywhere, but I keep trying.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah.
I really appreciate that. The whole idea of homework, I've been thinking about the fact that my son has a case manager because he has an IEP at school. So we talk all the time on how we can keep him in line, you know, just academically in line. You know, she's always, you know, on him about, you know, are you doing this assignment? Were you with that assignment? And while I thought that was a really great idea, maybe that's not a good idea, because then I'll come home every day and talk to him about the same things that she's talking about. So he doesn't get a break. So I just thought about that. And I know, and just as the other moms were sharing, as soon as I mentioned homework, it just his hands get sweaty, and, you know, the conversation goes to a whole different level, and he starts stuttering. You know, it's just, and I never thought of those things as necessarily as triggers, but that's exactly what it is. So as I'm thinking, it's a great thing to keep him on task. You know, maybe it's overload. I mean, he comes home at 8:30 after football practice, and then I'm like, oh, what do you have to do today? You know, what homework do you assign him? So he has no time. I'm not giving him a minute to even just spend 25 minutes just at 8 o'clock at night to just sit down and do nothing or something.
Well, so and so one of the things that you said you wanted to take aim on was reconnecting, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
If you weren't talking to him about homework, what would you talk to him about?
about the things that he enjoys. Like, you know, maybe I should ask him because I'm not doing that. I'm not asking, so how was football practice? You know, I never, as a matter of fact, I've never even asked that question. And that means a lot to him. And then he said, you know, how did practice go? I'll say, so how was school? And I'm thinking, you know, his class.
What do you need to do tonight?
Did you, right, or did you, were you late to your classes? You know,
right.
You know, were you curious, George, before you went to third period? Or, you know, did you talk to that instructor? Because they're teaching him how to advocate for himself to his teachers, but, you know, I'm keeping it really academic, everything. Keeping it academic, get up on time, put your clothes away, put them in the, you know, in the laundry room. That's a typical get off your phone, go to bed, why are you still up?
So you're focusing on all the things he either feels like he doesn't do well or doesn't particularly like.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I've never thought of that as triggers. I never.
Yeah. Well, saying is that he loves football, right?
Yes.
He goes to football practice, and so there's an opportunity for you to connect.
Not ask
right.
At
you know what my favorite question is? What I ask my kids every day after school? What happened today that made you laugh?
Wow.
It's always my first question. I know it should be, what did you learn today? But my kids will connect with me differently if I find out what happened today that was funny.
Right.
Yeah.
Because they like to laugh. And then from there, you know, then they start telling me about their day, and eventually I hear about every class they have.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the access point is the relationship with them first.
Kate's getting really good
at maybe I won't. I'm sorry.
Liz, and
Kate's getting really good at telling me what she needs. So she'll say, Mom, if you just say it with a bit of humor in your voice, or, Mom, can you just laugh? Then that just lightens it. And so she's telling me that. Or she'll say, if you didn't say it that way, it would be different. And sometimes I get, it's like I'm walking on eggshells because I have to think every single time I open my mouth. But also if I stop and listen to what she's saying and not take offense, then she's giving me some really good clues. So the other day, like, her room was such a bomb site, and was starting to be smelly, and I could have just gone in there like I've always done and gone, this room's trash, it stinks, open your window, get rid of all your, you know, glass stuff in there.
Right.
I went in there, and I can't remember what I said, but I was just saying some really funny things. I was making it funny, and she was just laughing about it. So out come all the cups, out comes the rubbish. You know, it may not have got tidy, but it was like I got part of what I needed done, but it was all through humor. Yeah.
Well, and you communicated what you needed, and you stayed connected in the process.
Yeah.
And that's
just
a challenge, but it's a skill.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Just on the messy room thing, what's worked well for me this year is just being really clear what the most important things are. And, you know, for me it's been around Lauren finishing school and rebuilding my relationship with her, and for a range of reasons, you know, her remaining living at home until she finishes school. When I go up to her room, instead of complaining about, you know, like Liz said, there's crap everywhere, and plates and all that stuff, and every time I go up to her room, I pick up a dirty bowl or cup and take it downstairs. I don't say anything. I might say something funny and go, oh, my God, no wonder I can never find any glasses, and laugh or something, but I just don't ask her to do it. Just take it, because I get frustrated and I think, is it on my list? No, it's not on my list. Then shut up.
And the other thing is that you can have the conversation, and then as you're, you know, keep it playful, keep it about nothing. And as you walk out, you can say, by the way, when you come back downstairs next time, would you bring down some of the dishes? I'm going to bring some. Let me bring the rest. you can ask them in a way that's not judgmental, that's not, I can't believe your room is like this, because they know they're supposed to take their stuff out of their room. They know, right? But if you make it not, if you're not catching them being bad, they're going to be much more willing to be helpful.
I just had one idea too for Stephanie, I think it was, around waking. Is it your daughter or your son up for school?
My son.
So what
for school,
works for me this year, the majority of the time, is I will go upstairs and wake Lauren up and say, hey, would you like me to bring you a cup of coffee? And because it's an offer of something I know she wants, I pretty much always get a polite response, which is, yes, please, which is so different from, so then I go downstairs and I bring her up a cup of coffee and sit her up in bed. And sometimes if she sits up and has the coffee, that's a huge win, but sometimes she'll go back to sleep and, you know, then I might say, pop up again 5 minutes later, see if she's awake and say, hey, would you like me to make you some cheese toast? So try and just use the sort of activate the brain, which is she wants food and she's a teenager and she wants caffeine and I need caffeine and sort of try those things. So I'm not asking her to do anything other than accept something from me, which is much more likely to get a positive response.
I agree with that. It's just, you know, the idea is to begin to read. What I'm hearing from all of this is to sort of put yourself in their eyes and remember to think about what do they want, what do they need. They want to tell you about football. They want to have a cup of coffee and wake up slowly. That, you know, like they're human beings. They're no longer little children. And so when we start respecting that they have things that are interesting or compelling or important to them, and we respect what they want instead of just having it be what we think is important, then they're much more receptive when we want to share something that's important to us. That's sort of the sort of encapsulating it all. But it's a great example. Another example, Pam, of taking aim, you know, is not just getting up in the morning, but getting up in a sort of good, productive way. Right. And so what did it take to get to that point? So I just want to be mindful of time. I want to ask everybody, let's sort of look towards the final four questions. And if you're using the workbook at the end of every chapter, there's a worksheet for you to use. You can either do it online or you can print it, depending on how you tend to focus. And we ask the same four questions at the end of every call. And I think it's really, really helpful if you'll commit to yourselves, whether we have time to ask them all or not, to take the time at the end of every call to sort of journal these, what you're taking away from the call each day. This is where the work of coaching really happens between the sessions. And so as you capture what you thought about and realized in today's call, that's what will stay with you in the coming weeks as you move forward. So the first question is always, what did you focus on today? What were you thinking about? I know what you took aim on. I know what I was talking about. We were talking about taking aim. But what was, you know, were you talking about thinking about a particular son? Were you thinking about your husband? Like, what was on your focus today? And then the second question is, so these four questions are designed to help you encapsulate what you've learned in the last hour. Okay? So what were you thinking about? What was guiding? What, you know, oftentimes we may be talking about compassion or taking aim, but I'm thinking about my middle child, or I'm thinking about my oldest child, or I'm thinking about myself, or my, you know, my mother or whatever. Or maybe I'm thinking about I really need to do something differently, or, you know, whatever it is for you. It's going to depend. So, but what were you focusing on? And what's your aha? What's your takeaway from today? What's that light bulb or moment of clarity? What's the message that you're taking away from today's call? And then, what do you want to commit to? Is there a change or a specific action that you want to commit to taking? And if so, how do you want to set yourself up for success with that? So we talked at the beginning of the call that Liz and Pam were both talking about conversations they wanted to have with their daughters, and they were already thinking about how do they want to be successful in that conversation. You know, Diane likes to talk about Waffle House moments, not to have intense conversations in the middle of a fight, but to do it on Saturday morning at Waffle House, right? How do you want to be successful? So let's just take a minute to share ahas. What are you taking away from today?
One thing for me, it was a good reminder of around activating the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Just reminding, and Lauren sort of becoming a little bit more part of that conversation,
mm-hmm.
and interested in that herself, but just, you know, making sure that there's the right food, and that if she's not reacting the way I want her to, then, you know, where's the brain in terms of is it activated?
Great.
And I would say for me, just noticing, I guess, what triggers him. If he's done his homework, I guess that's it. I shouldn't push, you know, I shouldn't, like, keep pushing because I wanted to set up this structure, but, you know, if he's doing his homework and, like you said, he's starting to self-advocate and talk to the teachers, I should just kind of step back and, you know, just applaud his effort.
Yes. We call it celebrating the successes. Yeah, try to focus more on what's working instead of what's not.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. Who else?
I wrote do.
Liz and then Stephanie.
Okay.
I wrote do one thing at a time because I do get really triggered by all the overwhelm, all the things that are happening in my life. So I'm learning for myself to do one thing at a time and not the stupid thing about multitasking, which I just can't do and I pretend I can. And that also relates to my taking aim is focusing on one thing, looking at just at one thing that needs to change. But that's with the conversation with Kate. So, yeah.
Yeah, great. So really, so when you're starting to talk with Kate, it's not about everything I can do, but what's one thing I can do?
Yeah, and helping her to see that as well. Because there's a whole lot of stuff for her that she recognizes that is not working and not happening. It's to try and help her just do one thing. But it's in conversation with her, yeah.
Yeah, great. And Stephanie, what about you?
So the reconnecting, and you ladies have given me great ways to do that. You know, you've reminded me. I love the since I gave my son and my daughter a kiss this morning, I can, instead of saying give him a kiss and waking up, just get up. It could be like, hey, can I bring you X? You know, would you like, you know. So I really am going to try that tomorrow morning. And also when he comes home, it won't be about the laundry list of academic things he should have done. It'll be just simple. So how was football? You know, something that he enjoys, and I can do that. Those are little things
great.
I can do.
Yeah. And the little things begin to add up to big things.
Yeah.
You know? They really, really do.
This was great, because now I feel like I can do something. You know what I mean? I feel like now this 1 hour has made me feel like I can do something. You know, I have something that I can do that'll make it better.
Yeah.
And in the group's validation that I can make a difference, even if everybody else isn't at home, that it will matter. You know, and I appreciate everybody's feedback.
Yeah. And you can, and that's a great thank you. That's a great segue to sort of closing today. It's just to remember that you can't change everything. You can't control everything. You can only control how you respond to whatever's happening in your family dynamic. That's the only thing that's in your control is how you respond. And so part of this process is about being conscious and aware and intentional about how you respond to create the kind of change that you're looking to create long term. And we start by taking aim. And we'll go through the process and the model as we go through these calls, but really it's about focusing on shifting your approach, your perspective, your dynamic, so that you can create and empower your kids to be as effective as they can. So just being here, being present, being connected is doing something, and every time you have these conversations and raise that consciousness, it's moving you forward and it's moving your family forward. Mm-hmm. So thank you all for sharing yourselves with me and with each other, and for your candor and your truly loving support of each other. It makes a difference. Have a great couple of weeks, everybody. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.